Our language commentator Jeff Nunberg usually talks about how we use language, but today he has some thoughts on how people use their hands when they speak, particularly in Italy, where gesturing has developed into a language of its own.
Last month, I was in Naples, where I spent a semester teaching a couple of years ago. I was having dinner with a friend who told me he had to leave the next morning to take a train to Amsterdam. "Why the train?" I asked. "Is the flight too expensive?" He waggled his index finger in the Italian gesture of negation, then rubbed his index and thumb together to indicate money, then fluttered his four fingers against his thumb in the gesture for fear, then flapped his hand like a bird. All of which translates as, "It's not the cost, it's that I'm afraid of flying." That's the way conversations often go among the Neapolitans, who use gestures even more than the other Italians do. I always look on it with a certain awe. I'm comfortable speaking Italian, but I have inhibitions about attempting those elaborate gestural maneuvers for myself. It brings home to me how much I'm an American boy with an American's mistrust of people who talk with their hands. Of course, we Americans have plenty of gestures of our own. We wink and nod, shrug and shudder. We fold our arms to show obstinacy, rub our hands to show anticipation, raise our thumbs in approval and our fists in triumph. And we express contempt with a universal gesture that the Romans called the digitus impudicus, or impudent finger. But we tend to think of these gestures as an extension of body language, those unconscious physical signals that reveal our moods and attitudes. And we're suspicious of people who use gestures in an artful or demonstrative way, what we disparage as gesticulation. We take it as a sign that somebody's passions have gotten the better of him. That's an attitude we inherited from Enlightenment philosophers like Rousseau and Condillac, who saw gestures as the natural expressions of raw emotions. They claimed that the first languages were entirely gestural and indistinguishable from the dance. And they regarded Italians' love of gesture as the survival of that primitive form in a people who were ruled more by passion than reason. But the gesturing of the Neapolitans is anything but the natural expression of elemental emotions. Describing it as an elaborated form of body language is like describing the language of Keats as an elaborated form of coughing. That point was brought home to me as I was reading a recently published book called Gesture in Naples. It was originally written in 1832 by Andrea de Iorio, a Neapolitan priest and archaeologist, and it's been something of a cult book ever since. But it was never available in English until last year, when it was translated by Adam Kendon, a noted ethnographer who specializes in the use of gesture. De Iorio wrote his book at a time when archaeologists were trying to catalog and interpret the thousands of classical artifacts that had recently been excavated at Pompeii and other sites. He was struck by how often the gestures of the figures seemed to mirror those of the Neapolitans of his own time. Looking at a bas-relief, De Iorio would say, "This slave is remonstrating with her friend for not loving her enough, and her friend is replying that she loves her a great deal and is coming to embrace her." The German archaeologists were mystified as to how he came up with those readings, but the Neapolitans got the point right away. So De Iorio set out to write a lexicon of the Neapolitan language of gesture. Language isn't too strong a word here. The system may not be quite the equivalent of the sign languages used by the deaf, which are comparable to spoken language in every respect. But it has nouns, verbs, adverbs and prepositions, superlatives and comparatives, tenses and negations, and its elements can have a wide range of meanings. Take the gesture called the schioppetto, or finger snap. Depending on the context, it can signal joy, acclamation, scorn, indifference, or an invitation to dance. Why did the Neapolitans develop such an elaborate gestural code? In his introduction to De Iorio's book, Adam Kendon notes that the Neapolitans were accustomed to live large parts of their lives in public, in noisy streets and piazzas. He points out that gestures were an ideal way of communicating under those circumstances, particularly when you didn't want to be overheard by everyone within earshot. That's all plausible, but functional explanations like that always leave me feeling a little dissatisfied. It's like saying that cowboys took to yodeling so they could communicate over long distances. True, but it doesn't get you all the way to the sons of the pioneers. And for the Neapolitans, gesture is something more than just a substitute for speaking or an accompaniment to it. It's an art, too, and it's no accident that Naples was one of the birthplaces of pantomime and the Commedia dell'arte. The Neapolitans know that gestures can have a precision and expressive power that spoken language can only fumble at. They must feel sorry for northern peoples like us who have only primitive words as emissaries.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University and the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center.